Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at consumer scams. And unfortunately, the spring season brings a whole new batch of scams. And then, of course, there are ones that are kind of ongoing, regardless of the time of the year. And Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Renan, our guests today, to talk about it with you. Sandy's administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle is the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. So they're regulars on the show. They come by once a month or so to talk with us. Certainly, if you have questions, complaints, comments, I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. Sandy Chalmers, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry.
Yeah, Michelle Rennett, great to see you, too.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having us.
Well, as always, I've been reading in the papers here the last few weeks. There have been some people that have, unfortunately, some grandmas that have had some money stolen from them. And
right.
Sandy, I don't know.
This has been an ongoing problem for years, and it all ties back to wire fraud, wiring money, usually overseas. But just since March 30th, we've had a real spate of complaints from people, all of whom have lost at least $3,000. So this is not insignificant. One woman, unfortunately, lost $16,000. So there are three basic wire fraud scams going around right now. One is the infamous grandparent scam,
right,
where an elderly person receives a call from somebody who pretends to be a grandchild in trouble and please wire me money immediately and don't tell mom and dad. And once they typically ask for $2,500 or so the first time. And if the grandparent does wire the money, the criminal will come back and ask for more. And it just goes on and on until usually the elderly person lets somebody know, you know, I think I may be, I'm being ripped off here. So if you do have elderly relatives or friends, have a discussion with them about this. Typically, the criminal will say, posing as the grandchild, don't tell anybody, you know, you need to keep it quiet. Whenever you get a call like that, don't be afraid to talk to somebody before sending money. Another scam that we're seeing right now, unfortunately, is the Nigerian prince scam. We had somebody lose $4,300 to that one. Most people know about that one. And then another one, also from somebody who lost just under $3,000. This person received a fake check to be a mystery shopper, and the criminal asked them to wire back the balance. Of course, the check was fake to start with, and this consumer ended up stuck with the whatever they wired to the person. So. Typically, we're asked, how do I know? How do I know it's a scam when I get one of these calls? The minute somebody asks you to wire money, just
hang up.
Stop right there. No matter who they say they are, they may say they're the IRS, they may say they're a grandchild in trouble, just stop right there and talk to somebody else before you wire the money.
Very good advice. And Jim in Wausau has a question for you about a product, so let's go to him. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm wondering whether there's a definition for Greek yogurt. Public radio recently had a story saying that the sales are expanding exponentially for the product, yet I bought some that, unlike the definition I'm aware of, it's supposed to have more protein than regular yogurt, has exactly the same. It's a brand name that says has Greek in it twice, yet in very tiny type, it says style. And one of the components of the yogurt is pectin, so I'm wondering if they just added a thickener to make regular yogurt thicker and then called it Greek.
Yeah, I've seen Greek yogurt at the grocery store lately, too. I believe that would fall under food labeling laws, which we do not administer. But that's something where we can talk to other people at the Department of Agriculture and maybe get you an answer and post it on your Facebook page.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jim, we'll check that out. We'll post something up on our Facebook page. So pay attention to that, will you?
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, they put that style in little letters.
Sometimes we can become involved when there are suspicious advertising claims. If the yogurt claimed to have some kind of medicinal purpose or, you know, you'll lose weight, that kind of thing, we can become involved.
Lynette in Madison, your turn. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. I was traveling through Tennessee recently and with my family, and we received a call at 1:30 in the morning by supposedly the front desk person who said he was trying to get information from me. I answered the phone in a deep sleep, you know, or waking up from a deep sleep. But his story basically was that he had lost about 20 to 25 hotel guests' information, and he had to retrieve it before the next shift got on. So he needed my name and address and my credit card number.
Wow.
And it just right away when he, you know, you're in a daze because you just get woken up, but it just didn't sound right to me. Hung up, I said I'd call him back. I heard the woman next, you know, through the wall. She was giving him information and said, oh, you're welcome.
Oh.
So that's a new one on me. I had never had that happen. So I don't
want
to share that with people, you know, if they're going to be traveling through the summer, throughout the summer.
Right. That's a really great piece of advice to bring forward, Lynette, to pay attention to who's calling you. And the hotel shouldn't need to call your cell phone. I mean, in order to get the information, you know,
or even your
room number,
yeah,
through the room
number.
Phone, they could get that information from you in the morning, and credit card numbers wouldn't need to be had. And upon checkout, you know, check in. So it's really good to be alert like that. You always want to be very cautious when someone's calling you asking for your credit card or number or any personal information.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, that's one to put in your memory. I remember my sister going to New York first time she was in New York. She stayed at a hotel, and she got in a suitcase and that just in the room, and she gets a call from supposedly room service down or the main desk. They wanted her to come down to pick something up, so she leaves. And I expect probably what happened was is before the door got shut, there was somebody who got their foot in the door or whatever. She was gone. She comes back, and a bunch of her stuff was stolen. So
sure, there's that delay to the door closing. I don't ever walk away until I pull it closed, and then I check that it actually sealed. Yeah. And that I'm.
Well, she lost her camera, and fortunately, she took her purse with her. So, but she lost some things. It was too bad. All right, we have all these great stories to tell here. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection talking with us today about consumer scams. You can join in, question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. I'm guessing one of the most popular programs you run into is the no-call list. Everybody seems to love that. Now there's the no-text list as well. Maybe you can talk about that for a minute.
Right. This is a new protection for consumers. Right now we have about 2 million Wisconsin phone numbers on the no-call list. So, yes, it is probably the most popular state government program there is. But the legislature just passed a law that provides additional protections for consumers by shielding them not only from intrusive and annoying telephone sales calls, but now also text messages. So if you have a cell phone and you're not on the list, by all means, get your number on the no-call list. And you can do that by calling 1-866-9-NO-CALL, or go to the website at nocall.wisconsin.gov.
All right. And if you're already on the list for the cell phone, do you have to do it again for the texting? Or
no, you'll be included automatically.
Okay. All right.
Remember that the registration only lasts 2 years, and people quite frequently forget when they signed up.
Yeah.
So anytime you happen to think about it, sign up again, and your registration will automatically be renewed another 2 years.
Let's turn to Mike in West Bend. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good.
I attended a village town hall meeting regarding locating a big box store in a particular community. I signed my name and address, and I used a particular spelling of my name with an apostrophe, which I have never used in my life before or since. And surprisingly, a month or so later, I got a solicitation from a political organization that used the same spelling, and it made me very cautious about signing anything, even in a public format where that information could be mined for uses other than what I intended it to. Have you ever heard of anything like that being public record information being used to solicit campaign ads or donations?
Go ahead, Sandy.
Yes, we have heard about this, and it doesn't only apply to political purposes. Of course, any day you provide information online and through a number of channels, and that information can be shared and sold, and that just continues to echo and echo and echo. So I have no doubt that the people who sign the recall petitions, for instance, that's all public information, and that information will be used by various political groups and companies for marketing purposes.
Yeah. There you go, Mike. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Bob in Oconee County, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Right.
In the last year, I've received two different job offers through one of the job services online.
Okay.
The first one actually sent me a check, which I took to a credit union in Appleton, and they knew nothing about the company. They didn't want to cash the check. They wanted to keep it. I told them no, they could have all the copies they wanted. And then I follow that up with a call to the Wood County Sheriff's Department because the business that it was associated with was over in Stevens Point. They filed a complaint for me, but I've never heard anything. And now I've got a second one from the same job site that I'm sitting on because I don't know who or how to contact someone about it to make them aware of it. I wonder if you can give me some guidance there.
You said something about an online job service. Was it like a Craigslist type ad?
No, it was. You want me to name it?
Sure, go ahead.
It was Career Builders.
Okay.
Which is supposed to be pretty reputable.
Right, but once your information is in that system, it can be accessed by whoever. And we have had a number of complaints from people who some of them are the work at home type scams where they'll ask you to pay an upfront fee in exchange for some kind of information on jobs, and those turn out to be fake checks. And I don't
the first one actually sent me the check with a list of a specific laptop and a specific type of document printer and a couple other items that would have ate up the amount of the check. And I was just supposed to go out and buy those at retail locations.
So they sent you a check to pay for the equipment you need?
Correct.
that sounds suspicious to me. And it sounds, it does not sound like the way businesses usually operate when they hire a person. My guess would be that they would send you a fake check and the bank would hold you liable by federal law for the value of the fake check.
Well, that was the other thing interesting. It was a local credit union down in Appleton that the check was drawn on.
Yeah,
so I went directly to that credit union, and they do nothing about it either.
We had a scam in the Eau Claire area. A guy was running a Craigslist-type scam, and he was able to print checks that looked like they were drawn on a local bank. And, you know, these criminals are very, very
smart.
Good at what they do.
Yeah, there you go.
Who do you contact when you receive something like that so that somebody, you know,
follows up on it? Yeah.
Right. You can file a complaint with our agency because we do keep those in our system and database to make sure that if individuals like yourself call us ahead of time, we can say if we've received other complaints and we can see when different things spike. And that's how we, earlier in the program, we're talking about the grandparent scam. We've been getting a number of complaints about that. So you could easily...
For that?
You could call our 800 number and have a complaint form mailed out, and that's 1-800-422-7128. Or you can go to our website, which is datcp.wisconsin.gov. And file online.
Can you repeat that again for me, please?
Sure. It's our department initials, datcp.wisconsin.gov.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Our guest here, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Join in with your questions. Have an open line at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email at talk@wpr.org or on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show and post there. And Helen in West Salem, it is your turn. Hi, Helen. Thank you for calling.
We've been getting calls several times a day from three different places, and one is unknown caller, one is private caller, and one is telephoned, and they never leave a message, and we just don't answer, but it's a real nuisance. The last one always occurs about 8:55 p.m. at night. So do you know anything about those, who they would be and what it means?
Can't say that we do know specifically who they are. It's good you're not picking up because you won't fall victim to any potential scam that could be behind those.
Mm-hmm.
They could be charity calls, survey calls. It could be our friend Robo Rachel calling you.
Yeah.
Or it could be a political kind of call. So by not picking up, you won't fall victim. You can file complaints with our office that you're getting these, but we typically need some information to follow up with if we're going to be able to proceed with looking at the complaint. So, you know, if you're comfortable just letting the phone ring, that's the best thing you can do.
That's the problem. It's constantly running to the phone, and then that's what it is. So
it's a pain.
It's a real pain. So, but you don't know who would be behind any of that.
I can't say that we do at this point.
Now, the political people generally leave a message, but we haven't had that for a while. I know that's going to start up again.
Yeah,
sure.
Pretty quick.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. You mentioned Rachel and the Rachel calls, and somebody in Wauwatosa was wondering about those. There's no way to really get them to stop. Sandy?
The Federal Trade Commission is putting considerable resources into trying to track these people down. And
good.
It's a number of operations. It's not just one. You know, there could be dozens and dozens of organizations using that Rachel recording. And the reason they do that is apparently it works, and they're able to get money from people using that. So one example is that the Federal Trade Commission, which is the nation's consumer protection agency, recently levied a $30 million fine against a couple of organizations that were making these illegal robocalls. So that's good news for consumers. It will be difficult to completely eliminate them because many of these calls originate from overseas and Canada, unfortunately. And it's kind of like peeling back the layers of an onion. You know, there's always more there. But the feds are being aggressive in going after these callers.
We have Marianne in Gordon, Wisconsin, up next with a question for you. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if your guests have ever heard of a timeshare resale company called Continental Resources.
Hmm. So this is a company that says it will resell your condo, your timeshare, rather?
Timeshares, yes.
I can't say, Marianne, that we have heard of that company specifically sitting right here. You would want to call our hotline and ask them to do a business inquiry check to see if we've received any complaints against that company before you enter into any business with them. That's what we advise consumers to do. You'll also want to just consider up front, make sure you have a written agreement. What is it that they are going to deliver? Do you have to pay anything up front? Timeshare resale can be very tricky. We do receive a lot of complaints from people that the resellers are not delivering, and consumers put an additional thousands of dollars into the resale firm and with no result. So you want to be very cautious before you enter into any agreements with them and know all your costs up front, and then if they sell it, what do you get in payment on the back end from that sale? And everything in writing if you enter into anything with them, but definitely see if we have any complaints against the company.
And
okay.
And the number
Thank
to
you. Yeah, that hotline number
it's 1-800-422-7128. 1-800-422-7128.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Certainly worth looking into that. Jim and Final Lake, an unbelievable number of commercial telemarketing calls, even though they're on the state's no-call list. I know we're currently registered, but the telemarketers don't seem to care. In-state, out-of-state, it's not being effective for us. It's not working. Anything to be done about this? Otherwise, we shouldn't even pretend the state has a no-call list. Well, actually, it's worked for a lot of people. I mean, I think there's pretty high satisfaction. But there are issues, apparently, Sandy.
We have, I believe, 500 or so companies that are registered to telemarket in this state. And many of them, I know I would be getting calls from if I were not on the mm-hmm. on the no-call list. Insurance companies, banks, credit card companies. These are the kinds of companies that respect the law and honor the fact that your number is on the no-call list. On the other hand, we have a huge number of criminal organizations, many of them tied to organized crime, who are working from overseas in countries like Panama, Azerbaijan, India, you know, a long way from Madison, Wisconsin, where we are, who flagrantly ignore the state and federal no-call restrictions. And it is a concern. It's extremely annoying to have your phone ringing all times of the day and evening. It's a problem that the federal government partners with us on. Of course, our laws are, our jurisdiction extends to the borders of this state. So we have to partner with other states and the federal government to track down these people from overseas. And the other thing here is that the advent of internet technology for calling has really changed the landscape when it comes to no call, because these people can operate very, very cheaply. They can make calls for pennies a call from anywhere in the world.
Unfortunately. Richard in Potosi, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I came very close to falling for a scam involving computers. I got an email from a good friend who lives in another city, and it said that he had been traveling, and he was traveling in London. His wallet and passport were stolen. He needed money to get home. And he mentioned a couple other mutual friends that he'd asked for money. And could I send him some money? I almost did it, and then I got suspicious and called his number in the States, and he was there and told me, oh, his computer had been stolen when he was in London.
Oh.
And he made the big mistake of putting all of his passwords, including his email account, on his computer in a different area.
Oh.
And so someone was calling the names of his passwords of his account and asking for money. So complicated scam, but very convincing.
Wow.
And Richard, we hear about this scam a lot, and it doesn't always happen with a stolen computer. It can happen when the person's computer is sitting right in front of them. They're able to hack an email account and get access to a full email contact list and send out the information, I'm here, I'm stuck, I need your help in order to get home, I've been mugged. It's a version of the grandparent scam, but it's the electronic version. So please wire me money, help me out. And if you try and respond, well, you're getting the hacker, and they pick up little pieces of information from all the emails that they have access to, and they can sound as if they're very legitimate and they are the person that they're pretending to be. So you did a great thing by picking up the phone and calling the person, using a different form of communication to get in touch. And if you can't get in touch with that person, call another friend or relative or something to check on it. But if they need help, they're going to get a hold of you another way.
Yeah,
you know, they're not going
to
just use the email.
To call the person by another means and verify.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the most important accounts to protect by password is your email account, because a lot of your shopping accounts, bank accounts, you can reset a password by accessing the email. So whether you're talking about a computer, a laptop, or a mobile phone, make sure you have your email password protected with a good, complex password that includes upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and special characters.
And don't store the password on your computer.
Right. No.
And another thing is, when you leave Facebook or email, be sure to log out. Don't leave your account logged in.
Right. And change that password often. I mean, you need to remember it, but change it often because it's easy to pick up on.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Patricia in Madison. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a different question. I made the call. I was changing. I called Dish because I wanted to change from cable to Dish. And I think I gave them so much information. I gave them my birthday, my credit card, my MasterCard number, my checking account routing number, my Social Security number. Of course, they had my address and my telephone number. And then after I hung up, I thought, oh, my goodness, what did I do? Did I give them too much information?
Well, Michelle, what about it?
Well, Patricia, you're wise to be cautious and ask questions. The first thing you did was call them, so that's a good sign. You wanted the service.
Yes.
Now, in order to get that service, the company is going to ask you a lot of questions because they want to verify credit and payment, and it's a contractual agreement that you're entering into, so they want data. But ask them questions. Why do you need this? How do you store it? Do you keep it, or do you destroy it in a safe manner after you verify that I'm a good credit risk for this? So how do you protect it if you keep it? How do you store it so I don't have to worry about identity theft or someone else getting their hands on this information? So ask the questions, and if they're just needing it because we're going to store it, we might need it in the future, then see if there's an alternative that you can give them, or if they can, you know, if they want to use it as your customer number, can they give you an alternative, you know, auto-generated number instead of using your Social Security number or something?
Mm-hmm.
And my birthday, and my credit card numbers and my checking account numbers. Was that a mistake? Did I make a mistake? I'm really concerned.
Right. You know, I don't know that you made a mistake because you made the call. The next time, just ask questions. And there's nothing from preventing you right now from calling them again and saying, look, I had to give you all this before. How do you store it? I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now. And just ask them the questions.
Oh, very good. All right. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Very good advice. So just to ease your mind, Patricia, be worth the call. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Jeff in northern Wisconsin, turning to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. I appreciate what you people are doing.
Thank you.
I have a two-part question on cell phones.
Okay.
I don't know if you had heard this story yesterday of approximately $240,000 fine to a small cell phone company because they weren't delivering what they said they were going to, and people stopped making payments, and they sent those people to collection agencies, and then it ruined their credit rating, and there was a pull back and forth that was on the news yesterday. Are either of you aware of that?
Oh, yeah.
That was us that negotiated that settlement, so we are aware of it.
Great. I was hoping so. Great. I have a question on similar problem with a large cell phone carrier. The cell phone isn't a problem. It's the small wireless router box for a computer.
Okay.
And those aren't delivering at all because they claim they're 4G in some areas, and of course they say they're going to work 3G in some areas, but it kicks off within 30 seconds to a minute, and they did send me another router box, but that does the same thing because that's not the real issue. I noticed online there's a lot of those for sale because people aren't getting anything for it, but you have to pay about $300 to get out of the contract, two-year contract, so I was curious if you knew anything about that.
Can't say that we do, but again, it's one of those situations where this will help us. If you can file the complaint, if you've tried to deal with the company and you're getting no result from that, then we would encourage you to file the complaint so we could take a look at what the agreement is. If you're paying for service and you're not receiving it, it depends why. I mean, we have different laws that cover issues, so we would want to take a look and communicate with the company to see what's going on there. And that's how this whole other situation that you referred to earlier started. Consumers filed the complaints, so we became aware of the situation and could communicate with the company and take a look at our laws. So it's one of those cases where we'd encourage you to file that complaint, and we could look at what the router box is doing, what the company has represented about that situation, and you're not receiving service.
Okay, and best to contact you email or in a letter form?
Email works. You can go online or call the 800 number.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Then the 800 number is 1-800-422-7128. So we have that. And Dorothy in West Allis. Hi.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so glad to have you call. I got a telephone call from One Solution. She said she was from Europe, and she wanted me to go to my computer and put it on. And I didn't know what to make of it, so I just hung up.
She called you and said, turn on your computer?
Yes, she wanted me to go to computer, that she was from One Solution.
There are a number of scams going on right now. Sometimes you'll get a call from somebody who claims to be from Microsoft saying there's a problem with your computer and could you turn it on? And they either download spyware or some kind of malicious software onto your computer that allows them to track your keystrokes, gain access to personal accounts. Or I think that's the main one that we've seen, and I assume that that's what she was after in this case.
So it was good that I hung up.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely.
Again, if it's a situation where you're not initiating the call, you don't need the service, you're not seeking something, for me, always be suspicious of when the phone rings and someone's trying to ask you to give them information, give them access to something.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it just sounded strange, and I couldn't understand her dialect very well.
Yeah.
And,
And
you did the right thing. You did the right thing, Dorothy.
I was very scared. I thought, who do I call to find out and hear this is what your program was about?
Yeah, absolutely.
How fortunate. How fortunate.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right, that was Dorothy from West Allis. Let's go to Andrea in Hurley. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, I was just calling because I've recently got texts from like Target and Walmart saying that I won a gift card if I text the number. And these are both places that, you know, I shop at occasionally, and just wondering if they get that information from my credit card or debit cards.
Well, to be honest with you, I think they're just using some popular store names that pretty much everyone visits and enjoys picking up goods from. So we are aware of that text. It is a scam.
Okay.
The Walmart one, the federal government's looking at it as well and trying to track that back to who's sending it out. But random texts that you haven't entered a promotion or a contest to win something, again, one of those cases to be suspicious. They're trying to get information from you that they can go off and use to damage your credit and everything with.
Hmm.
Sure. We've seen a lot just recently where you're promised a free gift card or a free iPad, you know,
which people are
very interested in. Yeah, and typically you'll be directed to a website where you'll be asked for your Social Security number. And and whenever you're asked to provide a Social Security number or credit card number from somebody you don't know, a red flag should go up and just stop right there and think twice about what you're doing, because it's most likely a scam.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just immediately delete them, but the Target one was a little tempting because that's where I shop, but
another,
that's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah, another angle on these texts, spam text, if you want to call them that, it allows people to validate that your number is a live number, and then that information can be valuable, and they will sell your number to other criminals or marketers who are interested in having lists of live cell numbers.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Andrea. Thank you very much for calling. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection are guests today as we talk consumer scams. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking consumer scams with our guests today, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as well and post a question or comment there. And as a matter of fact, Elizabeth posted on my Facebook wondering if you guys could comment on the computerized calls they keep getting from credit card services that purport to offer a significantly lower rate of interest. We're on the no-call list, and these calls aren't from our card users. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and everybody is sick of getting those calls. Those are the robocalls that we were talking about earlier. Most originate from overseas. In almost every case, a pre-recorded sales pitch is illegal, and you should certainly feel free to ignore them. Probably the worst thing you can do is pick up and press a button to talk to a live person or follow any of the other prompts they give you, because that will just encourage them to call you more.
Yeah, there you go. We have an email from Stephen Madison. It says it bears mention again on air that the office that the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection does not cover health insurance nor the medical industry. So that's probably worth.
That's correct.
Steve is probably with the agency that does. So there we go. Cheryl in Spring Grove, Minnesota. Hi to you.
Hello. How are you?
Thanks. Fine. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I've had a few calls in the past where somebody will say they're calling from a certain law office, and they'll ask for a Carol Patterson, and they'll tell me there involves a case number, and I'll call the number back. And the first time I ever did it, I was pretty young and stupid, and I gave them, they wanted my Social Security number and made a name and all that good stuff. But I've had the call several times since, but I'm wondering who would you contact to report them, because I don't know of this Carol Patterson, and you know, sounds a lot like Cheryl, my real name, but.
Yeah, I would probably contact, I believe you're from Minnesota. I'd probably contact your Minnesota Department of Consumer Protection, whatever agency houses that, and report it to them. I'd also stop calling the law firm and not communicate with them any longer and try and ignore those calls. Yep. And, you know, because you gave your Social Security number at one point, I'd be, if you're not already, checking to your credit report regularly just to watch any activity on there, because that can last a long time, if not forever. So you're just going to want to get your free credit reports on a regular basis and be checking that out.
Yeah, and we do that. So we
great.
Mm-hmm.
Careful. So
good.
But yeah, that's happened quite a few times where they have a name close to yours, but
yeah. Well, we have someone in our living in the area that who has the same first and last name of my wife, and the middle initial is the same, although the middle name is not the same. And so every time we have, and that person has not good credit, and so every time we have to get a loan, we have to prove that my wife has to prove that she's not that other person. And it's sometimes hard to do. I mean, and, you know, you have calls from another city where there's a whole bunch of parking tickets, and why haven't you paid these tickets? Well, we've never been there, you know, things like that. So it's hard.
It can be very difficult.
Thanks again for calling, Cheryl. Jenny in Tomahawk. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. My call is similar to the one that you received before, but I didn't quite hear your answer. I keep getting calls saying your credit rating is fine, but we'd like to lower your interest rate.
Yeah.
Right. And that is probably the most frustrating call in the world today, because those people are calling people all over the world. These calls originate from overseas. They typically are made through the internet, which is very cheap, and you should not respond in any way, because if you do, it validates that your number is a live number, and it also kind of tags you as somebody who will respond to a fraudulent pitch. So once they have that information, they sell it to other crooks, and the calls will continue. The Federal Trade Commission has taken action against a number of companies who have been using this credit card services, lower interest rate pitch, but yet the calls continue, and it is very, very frustrating, because I get them too. Michelle, do you get them?
I definitely get them. I got one last Saturday.
So there you go.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah. I never respond. I just hang up. But
yeah, it's good.
But I get them so often, it's
maddening.
Yes, it is. It's frustrating to keep getting those calls all the time. And do they have any access to my credit rating, or do they just say this?
Well, some of the information that the credit reporting bureaus have, they sell. And some of it is also available online, and there are a number of data mining companies out there that just comb through the internet and aggregate data and create profiles on people. That's why we advise on a regular basis, really think twice about the information that you share online, because anything, any kind of information about you that is online will be gathered, shared, and sold.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. We got a Facebook question from Nicholas. I bought a brand new moped, but it's never run right. The dealer keeps trying to fix it, but it still runs badly. Had it for 90 days. What can I do? I'm tired of trying to fix it.
First, I'd ask if there's any warranty on it, because you probably need to continue. I don't believe the Wisconsin Lemon Law covers mopeds. I believe it's just the automobiles, the cars,
mm-hmm.
And trucks. So I think you're going to have to continue to work with the company. If that doesn't work, you may want to consult with an attorney and see if you would have any kind of case where you could go to court and look at that. If you bought it from a dealer, there may be something there. You know, if there was anything wrong with the moped and they didn't disclose it, it being brand new, I'm doubtful there, but not knowing all the specifics of the case. So it's a matter of keeping documentation, keeping records of all the interactions you're having with the company, and keeping a trail of what they are and are not doing for you upon your requests.
George in Columbus. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I'm curious about the Publisher's Clearinghouse. Do they actually give out any prizes?
That is interesting. They'd almost have to if they, in order to be legal, Michelle?
Yeah, I believe they do. It was a case, a Publisher's Clearinghouse long ago, over 15 years ago, did have some problems. I believe they give out prizes. You just want to make sure you're not paying for your prizes or getting involved and keep continuing to enter and paying more to enter in order to get the prize. A prize is a prize and should be free. So just watch how involved you get and how much you're purchasing in order to be eligible for things. You shouldn't have to do that. There should be other options for you.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of scams coming out of Jamaica lately, and Jamaica is becoming the new Nigeria, when it comes to prize scams. But we've had just a rash of complaints lately from people who receive calls from Jamaica, from people who claim to be from Publishers Clearinghouse. And they try to talk people into wiring money or going to Walmart and buying a Green Dot money card. It's a prepaid debit card, basically, and sending them money back to pay the taxes on the sum that they're about to receive. And some of these they're actually telling people that we're from Publishers Clearinghouse and we're in your neighborhood right now. We're on our way to your house. And they must have Google Maps up or something because they're able to describe the neighborhood.
Oh.
So, you know, they will just remember, they will say anything, do anything, say they're anyone to get you your money from you.
Oh, boy. Randy in Cadott. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I recently received a number of phone calls, and the callback number on my telephone is like 01234567 89. And I called AT&T, who is my cell phone provider.
Yep.
And I asked them why they would allow somebody to leave deceptive or fraudulent information on my telephone when I pay for a service through AT&T. And actually support the company. And they couldn't give me an answer that I thought was realistic. They told me that they had no control over what these other companies did. But I also know that somebody has to program AT&T's telephone system to allow that type of deception to take place. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on any of that.
Okay. Michelle, go ahead.
I can't get into the specifics of AT&T programming or anything, but we can talk about how a number of companies are able to spoof a phone number and leave whatever they want on a caller ID. And that is something that we try and caution consumers about. Don't always believe your caller ID, because they can say they are, we'll just say Walmart, because we've known that's happened, and they're not. They're a telemarketer, a fraudulent telemarketer behind that call, encouraging you to pick up. So while we tell people to monitor their caller ID, they have to be skeptical about what is being presented to them and be cautious until they actually get involved in a conversation. So again, can't talk to the technology if this can be prevented or not, but there are technologies out there that others are able to buy and spoof numbers and give different representations on that caller ID.
It's interesting that mobile carriers and email providers, internet service providers, are very interested in filtering and blocking spam. And I don't know enough about the technology. Maybe that's not even possible with landlines. But you raise a very good point. And the bigger issue here is the manipulation of caller IDs. And you really cannot trust your caller ID anymore.
And Ellen in Sun Prairie, I'll tell you what, we'll get to you, Ellen, in just a couple of minutes here. We have news coming up. Our guests today, Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, our guest as well. She directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll visit with Ellen from Sun Prairie next about some services, and Francis in Onalaska, and maybe you as well. You can join in with your questions and comments here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking consumer scams today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have you listening in and join in with your questions and comments as we move along today. Ellen in Sun Prairie has been waiting quite a while, so I want to go right to Ellen. Thank you for calling, and what's on your mind?
Thank you. I'm trying to avoid a consumer scam. I'm trying to locate people for a class reunion and have used some free services, but I wondered if there are any legitimate online search services that are available.
Oh, to find individuals.
Right. I'm very leery about giving my credit card to these places if I don't know anything about them.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if we can be much help there. If you have a particular service in mind or two that you've actually thought about, you could call Michelle, couldn't she?
She could try calling Consumer Protection to see if we've received any complaints about that company. If, you know, I can't say that I recall us getting a lot of complaints about that issue. So it would be a starting point to see, you know, if you could feel more comfortable or less comfortable about getting into business with one of those service companies.
Hmm. I talked earlier about companies that comb through the internet and aggregate data, and, you know, they collect bits and pieces of information, and before long they can create a profile on a person. These companies that Ellen is asking about are those data aggregation companies. And I don't know which are legit and which just want her credit card number. If she calls us, we can
at least check on some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, where do I call?
You call 1-800-422-7128.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had CenturyLink mentioned here on Wisconsin Public Radio just about a few minutes ago as a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio. But David in Gordon, Wisconsin, says weekly he gets a notice from somebody calling themselves CenturyLink telling him they need to do something about his service or it's going to be stopped right away. He just puts it in the trash. And he has been informed that it's not legitimate. It's been going on for several years. Why can't we shut down these services? Don't they kind of move around? I mean, it's hard to catch up with them, isn't it, Sandy?
Yeah, and that's the primary reason it's so hard to shut them down, because they're mobile and they can move. Most likely they're not in Wisconsin, which makes it difficult for us to track them down. But I know I frequently get letters from the magazines we subscribe to warning me that other organizations are using their name to, you know, pretend that we need to renew our subscription. And, it's just very, very difficult to track these people down.
Email from Diane. I've received a call for in which the caller ID, you check that, it says phone scam. Seriously, I see online that others have received calls ID'd with phone scam as well. Aside from being kind of hilarious, what's up with that?
Yeah, we've
Michelle?
We've seen that one. We've heard about that one on this show in the past as well, and we get it from consumers. Again, it's trusting that caller ID. We haven't exactly figured out what phone scam is, other than, you know, it, again, you don't want to pick it up. You aren't, if you pick it up, don't engage. You know, hang up the call, hang up on the call, because there's a telemarketer that we've seen behind that, just trying to get information, get your credit card number, whatever they can out of you, so they can go use that someplace else.
And Bill emailed and wondered, you know, just picking up, would that identify you as a live number if you like your voicemail service, if that kicks in? You know, somebody calls and then the voicemail, that'll indicate that that's a live number then, won't it, or will it?
It can, but what they're really looking for is for you to press a button on your phone.
Oh, okay.
They usually say press a number to talk to a live person, or press another number to stop these calls. That is what tags you as a live number.
Lynn in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is, how about online banking? And then as a follow-up, I didn't mention this to the screener, but what about the Medicare site?
Okay. So you're wondering if online banking is safe?
It's safe, yeah.
And then what about the Medicare site? Is that safe?
I guess I'm wondering if anything is safe. It sounded, from a few minutes ago, it sounded like nothing is truly safe. Maybe,
yeah.
But so that's my question.
All right.
We're of course saying enter things with an ounce of skepticism and be cautious, be on the alert. But as far as online banking goes, talk to your bank and initiate an account with your bank. They have a process for doing online banking with them. Always make sure you're looking for a secure site when you're doing the online banking. Don't use links that emails send you to go to your bank. Always type in the address for your bank yourself and go to that website for the online banking. Using links, you could end up at another bank that's not really a bank that looks like your bank. So you want to be cautious about that. They're out there trying to gather your information and doing what's called phishing. So they're representing through email that they are your bank, and boy, we need to verify stuff. It's again, you need to initiate it, and you type in the address.
Okay.
So,
all right.
And then again, it's changing that password regularly there.
Okay. Okay.
And Medicare fraud is a multi-billion dollar problem in this country right now. And I just did an interview with an AARP bulletin. I think the story ran in the April edition on efforts in Wisconsin to fight Medicare fraud. Mm. We hear from a number of people who get calls from people posing as Medicare saying, can you verify your Medicare number for us? And of course, your Medicare number is your Social Security number. So as Michelle says, if you get one of those calls, you call the Medicare number on the back of your card and verify that you really need to provide information or confirm an insurance billing or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the online, I mean, there really isn't any way to have a Medicare Part D except through online.
Yeah, well, and as long as you have the address, I mean, if somebody contacts you, you need to actually have the address for yourself to, you know, just drop it, go back online, go to your search engine, type in the proper address, or note the address. Is the address, if it's online, is the address the correct address? That's, I mean, that address has to be correct. And And it might even be, they might even try and just change one letter or one number or something. You got to be very careful.
One little character. So just, you know, be very cautious, because that's hard to miss sometimes.
Yeah.
But once you're in the site, you've gone there yourself, and you have your password and all that stuff, it's really about people searching from the outside to try to get into your...
They're not going to get in.
Well,
right. So I don't know enough about Medicare Part D, but you can sign up online at the Medicare site. One thing you can do is make sure that the web address says HTTPS. That verifies that you're on a secure site, and that the address ends in a .gov, which, of course, Medicare and Social Security would.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Frances in Onalaska, it's your turn. Hi, Frances.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is regarding electronic banking. I do my payments automatically. The question specifically is, what's a reasonable number of days for the computer process to handle electronic payment? I confirmed with my bank in this example that they processed the payment midnight on April 2nd. The receiving bank posted it late, a day on the 6th. So my question has always been, where's this, and my bank says, oh, you should allow 4 to 5 days. It has to go through the Federal Reserve. But my question there is, it's a human, obviously, that's putting up these times of posting. Where's the phantom or limbo credit or account that this payment supposedly sits when the electronic payment by computer should be instantaneously or within a day or two?
You'd think.
So how many days is a bank entitled to float your funds?
In all honesty, Francis, the Bureau of Consumer Protection doesn't handle the banking regulations for the state of Wisconsin. The Department of Financial Institutions is the agency that does the banking regulations and knows the federal regulations very well. So they would be better able to handle your question.
Yeah.
So you would want to reach out to them and ask them and make sure that there aren't some guidelines or regulations that things need to be posted within specific time periods.
What's the name of the organization?
It's the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions is the state agency that does banking regulation.
And there's a number online, I take it. That
I'm sure there
call,
is.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can understand the frustration, though.
Where, oh, yeah.
You know, banks, they can't, you know, they're perfectly willing to, you know, to process the payment, but why it should take that long is just, you know...
That makes no sense.
Yeah, and that happens quite often. With this particular account, we wouldn't be banking with them, except it's one of these deals where if you pay it up, you know, within the year, there's no interest rate. So I think the intention is for them to post the account late to earn the $35 late fee regularly, and just in case they don't get any interest at the end of the payoff. You know, and that's a company that does a lot of banking offshore, so didn't pay any federal taxes. I would name names, but I'm not sure if people want to know that, but the banking system just seems to be so one-sided nowadays when things have gone deregulation, and it's a,
buyer beware.
It's a scam that government sanctions, unfortunately.
Yeah. Buyer beware. Okay. Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling, Francis. Appreciate your call. And Lydia in Cumberland, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a teenage son going off to college, and I'm wondering about key things I could tell him to help him keep from being defrauded. I mean, I showed him the famous email from the Nigerian prince who seems to need help periodically, and he's like, oh, that looks like a good deal.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about if he's sort of credible. And so I would like to find some quick, sort of rules to live by that would help.
Well, I've just been through that myself with a couple of boys in school, so I hear you. And it's interesting that kids that age, from roughly 18 to 27 or so, are the most vulnerable to identity theft because they spend so much time online and don't think about the kind of information they're transmitting online. And they're brand new consumers and don't know enough to reconcile their checkbook and debit card statements. So probably the most important thing is to advise your son to be careful about the information that he shares online. Kids do not think about the kind of information that they put on Facebook and other social media. He should be careful to protect his smartphone and his laptop with a strong password, not leave it unprotected in his dorm room. And another problem that happens with college kids is that they move around frequently, and they don't always keep track of the mail that comes in. They need to make sure that they keep track of things like prepaid credit card offers. Those can be stolen and the address changed on them, and credit card accounts can be opened in a person's name. Those are some things that come to me off the top of my head.
One more, I guess I could add, or two, along the lines of identity theft is, you know, remind him, her, get that Social Security card out of the wallet. They don't need to be carrying it around in their wallet when they're going off to college. Keep it in a secure place in their apartment or dorm room, because assuming they're applying for jobs and different things, they will need it. But don't just carry it around every day. And then the other thing is that you can help with is when they come home to visit during the holidays, be doing the reminders or helping them do it, check the credit report. They're going to have a lot going on, and that's going to be probably at the bottom of the list. But, you know, you get a credit report every year. There's three agencies. Just check one at each holiday to make sure everything's going okay.
There you go. Good luck, Lydia. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck to those kids, too. Marshall in Port Edwards, hello.
Hi, good afternoon to you.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm wondering how safe it is to give my credit card number to the mail order companies. And I can think of some very reputable companies. They don't even want a check. They want a credit card number. And the company might be honest, and I can name several. And you call them. Let's see, your credit card, we have it on file, it ends in number, they give you the last four digits. And what is to stop some clerk, order taker, or somebody in that office from, I'll just take this number, they got it on file. How safe is it to give my credit card to a mail order company?
What do you think, Michelle?
Well, You're exactly right. It could be real easy for that clerk to grab that number. It depends on the security that the company sets up and what they do to protect it. So ask those questions. Ask them not to keep it on file, that you'll be happy to give it every time you want to make a purchase. But one thing I do is just use one credit card for those kinds of things, because I wonder myself, and so we just have one card that's our online and over the phone credit card number that we use, and that's the bill we open every bill every month and look at it, but that's the one we scrutinize with a fine tooth comb, and then we open it the day it comes, and if we see something, we're calling the credit card company and canceling the card. So that's one way of just countering that and making us feel better about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm doing that already. One credit card, and I do scrutinize the monthly statement very closely.
Yeah, very
and
good.
Have found erroneous charges on it in years past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you've answered my question. I thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Andy wonders why a small business can't be added to the no-call list so they don't get bothered all the time.
We get that question a lot.
I bet you do, Sandy.
Yeah. The answer is the law applies only to residential phone numbers. It does not apply to business numbers. So we just don't have legal authority to allow businesses to register on the no-call list.
So businesses should, I would think, be doing a little getting out there and talking to their representatives.
Well, you know? That certainly is their right as citizens. I said that we hear from small businesses quite often, and they get the Rachel calls too, and they have to pick up their phone, you know. And I heard from one insurance businessman who had to add a staffer because they got so many phone calls.
Oh, man. Gail in Appleton, hi.
Hi. I just want to tell you about a scam that happened to me that I was notified earlier this month in February. I bought a transponder, to pay the tolls. Uh-huh. And I went to iPass's website and bought it, used it, took it on my trip to Virginia and back. I got a letter last Monday from EasyPass, because that's the name that was on the transponder. It was a valid transponder, but the website, which now has been taken down, was not a legitimate website. And so now, I had to dispute the charges with my credit card company. It did purchase it through Google Checkout, and I just don't know. I'm assuming that's secure enough because it was February. I don't know if I should cancel. That's my main credit card. Cancel it and get a new card. Or I don't know if you had heard about that at all, about the transponders being purchased from a legitimate transponder from a fake website.
Can't say that I have heard of that, but it's a conversation you definitely want to have with your credit card company as far as if you want to cancel the card, because they're involved in the risk there, and you're going to want to monitor the bill to make sure it's not being used anywhere else.
It hasn't. Yeah,
it seems to me they may want to cancel it because it's some company that had a fake website that's been taken down has your information. So there's no, it's going to be difficult to track them. I would make sure your credit card company knows about it.
Sure.
I'd get that number changed. You can stay with the same company, just get the number changed.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll just issue you a new card.
Well, there's always a few problems associated with it. If you're using it to pay bills, automatic, that sort of thing, or if it's off, I have our one credit card number that's with a couple of different places, and so you've got to call those places and tell them, we got a new number. But in the end, it's for the best.
Right. It protects you, and the credit card company benefits too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've covered so many things. In the last 40 seconds or so, anything that we haven't covered you want to be sure to get across, or should we just be reemphasizing a thing or two?
I would say get your phone numbers on the no-call list. And remember, it now applies to text messages as well. It's a great protection that's offered for the people in the state. It's free of charge, and it does block numerous solicitation calls and now texts.
Thank you both very much for being with us today. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests. They'll be back again, and we'll do it again. In about a half an hour or so or less, Judith and I will be on the road on Interstate 90 headed toward Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Looking forward to meeting up with the Wisconsin Public Radio gang for a nice dinner tonight and a little talk and a chance to maybe share a cocktail or two. We're looking forward to seeing you up there in Eau Claire. And thank you all for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.